Japanese restaurants were pretty much unknown in the United States until well after World War II. Sushi, for instance, didn't make its appearance stateside until the mid-1950s. But these days you can find Japanese cuisine in just about every city in the United States. Now, one of the key people who's helped Japanese cuisine flourish in the country is Daisuke Utagawa. Born in Tokyo, he began his apprenticeship in sushi when he was 16 years old. Well, now he co-owns Sushi Co., the oldest sushi restaurant in Washington, D.C. Reporter Rebecca Shear recently sat down with Utagawa to talk about his life in food and about Japanese food in America, past, present, and the future.
Daisuke, thanks for joining us. So tell me, how did Japanese food spread in America?
I always sort of think Japanese cuisine spread in America in stages. First, there was this, you know, tempura, sukiyaki, that was, I think, brought by the military people after the World War II. And then in the late 70s, early 80s, sushi started. And at the same time, I think back then the government came up with sort of a recommendation of how Americans should eat to be healthy. And I think they said something like along the lines of, if you eat like Japanese, you'll be fine. And that, I think, helped. And now there are all these different kind of Japanese restaurants opening, ramen restaurants, soba restaurants. There are even tonkatsu, which is a breaded cutlet, Japanese-style restaurants, and izakaya, which is sort of a Japanese pub. And Japan has always culturally taken in outside influence and Japanified it. Sushi really originally was from China several thousand years ago. So, you know, Japanese cuisine is very, very wide in variety.
And you know a thing or two about variety, given all the projects that you already have going and the ones that are soon to come. Let's start with the Japanese cocktail bar. What exactly is a Japanese cocktail bar, and how would you say it differs from the typical cocktail bar you'd find here in the States?
Japanese bars has sometimes a function of almost a neighborhood social club. It's not uncommon to go to Japanese, what we call shot bar. You know, many bars usually serve what's called bottle keep. You buy the whole bottle and they keep it for you for a certain amount of time, and you go back there because, you know, you tell your friend, hey, I have a bottle kept at such and such, let's go there.
Throughout your visits, multiple visits, the bottle is still waiting
exactly,
for you.
Exactly, right.
Wow.
So to counter that, people started opening what's called shot bar. That's actually the closest thing to, I think, American bar, where they serve cocktails and they charge by a glass or shot. But, you know, some shot bar you go to, it's not uncommon to hear a customer talking to the bartender saying, you know what, I just read such and such poem and I feel this way. I want to compliment my feeling. Can you make me a cocktail? I mean, you know, if I would hear that, I would normally start laughing, but it's normal. And the bartender will take that really serious and would actually love that sort of interaction. And he will make a cocktail to make the mood. So in that sense, it's a little bit different from here. There are also bars that has a particular theme. I mean, there are jazz bars. You're not really allowed to talk in there because they will have unbelievable jazz collection, things that you probably won't be able to find even in the United States, old records. And they'll be playing this, but you go there and, you know, they might only have three kinds of whiskey because that's what the proprietor think would go well with listening to jazz. and you know, and that's the experience that you get from that.
Well, going back now to Japanese food, you were talking about how in Japan you take in so many cultures from the outside and you sort of Japanify it. How do you then translate the Japanese food to the American palate?
We don't. We try to bring what is essential in what I think the Japanese cuisine is. I cannot really speak for other people, but normally we don't try to, you know, change the recipe to meet American palate or you know, non-Japanese palate. Having said that, I think it's not taking an advantage of being in America if you only rigidly stick to the practices in Japan. Whenever two cultures meet, naturally slight changes occur, and I think that itself is a beautiful thing. And let me talk in terms of sushi bar.
Mm-hmm.
And sushi bar is one of the rare occasions one can sit in front of the cooks who's going to make your food. And because of that, each time when we serve something, we can see the customer's reaction. So if somebody said, this is the first time I'm going to have sushi, I don't think the sushi chef will be serving sea urchin. I was told by my teacher in Japan, he said, listen, when the customer sits in front of you, it is your job to take them on a journey. And I would say, why? And he said, well, because you can. And, you know, for the longest time, I didn't understand it. Same thing about subtlety and ingredients. He would say something like, if you want to be a really good cook, you have to really understand the ingredients and listen to it. If you listen to it long enough, it will tell you what to do. Okay. You know, it took a very long time to understand it. But, you know, that's sort of the philosophy that they have. So, I mean, to give you a very simple example, Sunday, you know, late afternoon, restaurant just opened. There's two men who sits in front of you. They're friends. One came from working all day because he had some project that he had to finish. The other one went golfing, typical Japanese. Now, you can tell by the way they are, and they might have talked about it. You might ask them, hey, how was your day, whatever. So what you do, you start them off with the two little different appetizers, or tsukidashi is what we call it. It's like these little freebies that you start them to whet their appetite, right? The guy who worked in the office, you might give them something with a little bit of vinegar. Vinegar stimulates your salivary glands, and you know they might wake up and they might think, oh, God, I'm ready to eat. And the guy who went golfing, he probably was sweating all day, so you give him something salty. And you might start them off from two separate places, but you might, you know, try to join them at some point, and then you take them on a journey. And, you know, I'm trying to come back to the question of how do we, you know, bring it to American palate? We don't. What we do is try to instill the philosophy of Japanese cuisine into the ingredients that's available here, into the techniques that we may not have known, incorporate them all, but still make it a Japanese food in its core.
Well, Daisuke Utagawa, it has been a pleasure talking with you today. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Daisuke Utagawa owns Sushi Co. and Daikaya in Washington, D.C. Rebecca Shear is a host, reporter, and producer at WAMU 88.5 in Washington, D.C. Now, you can get all the info you need at splendidtable.org.